Hey, hey.
Hi, Vince.
Thanks for joining us. I'm really excited to have you. I'm going to go ahead and kick things off, if you're cool with that.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. We're excited to have you. So Vince is the director of content marketing at BuzzStream. If you don't know what BuzzStream is, check them out. They're a content marketing platform, really useful for people who work on teams and need to coordinate outreach efforts and make sure you guys aren't maybe reaching out to the same person at the exact same time about the same things, you know? So he thinks content marketers should solve for users, not Google. He also loves finding creative content online. His previous work includes Siege Media, Homebuyer.com, The Grit Group. Outside of work, you can catch Vince playing with his two kids, enjoying video games. What kind of video games do you like? Really quick, make it like 2 seconds.
Sports games.
Okay, cool. video games or watching Phillies baseball. Vince has a bit of a heavier SEO focus, so keep that in mind. But he's an expert when it comes to really targeting outreach and doing it to scale, which I know is something that I think all of us can learn from. So we're really excited to have him here. So yeah, welcome.
Yeah, this is awesome. Just to before we get started, I want to say I'm like a super fan, cause a super fan of the podcast.
Thanks.
Told like everybody I know in the industry that I talk to, I'm like, have you checked out We Earn Media? Yeah. So
that means a lot.
When I got the job at BuzzStream, because I had started listening when you guys first kicked it off, and then like we had a kid, and like I stopped for a while. You know, I wasn't working, and then so I've been going back and listening to like the ones that I've missed, like from the first couple episodes and stuff. So
yeah.
It's good. That's awesome. I take notes. Yeah. I got like a whole list of notes, and you know, hopefully if I ever start a podcast on BuzzStream, like I've been saying, I'm gonna definitely want to have you both on to pick your brain about everything you've learned. Cause it's just like
cool.
A treasure trove of info.
Thank you.
Like, yeah.
We're going to hold awesome. You to that. I'm manifesting this for right. you. So yeah. Yeah, no, we are big fans of BuzzStream. Jackie and I used to use BuzzStream
back in the day.
Long time ago. And I still recommend it to large groups of, you know, agencies, people who work together. I don't really work with many people in that way anymore. So there's no use for me, but maybe you'd argue there is a use for me now. we could talk about that some other time.
Yeah. Vince will tell you otherwise.
Yes. it has been a long time, but it still is a tool that I do recommend. And I was thrilled to see that you joined BuzzStream because Vince, you and I got to connect what feels like a long time ago while I was at Distilled, the Search Love conference days, and to see a familiar face at BuzzStream, a company that I've admired their own content too. And knowing that you're going to be behind the scenes revamping things, and the content that you've been pushing out is fantastic. I do recommend our listeners to check that out too. And we can link to a few of our favorites. I have a few personally that I'll throw into the show notes. So yeah, I'm excited to see you there. And it's great to have you on the podcast. Thank you again for being here.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm excited.
All right. So
ready.
Perfect. Just so our listeners know, and Jackie already touched upon this, you have a bit of a heavier SEO focus than perhaps even me and Jackie and some of our listeners. Your background at Siege Media speaks to this, but I think you're going to have a lot of good tips for our listeners as far as targeted outreach goes, especially when it comes to pitching content-led assets or content-led PR campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
One of our first questions that came to mind when we were all kind of talking about this topic is how to approach pitching a brand new industry that perhaps you've never pitched content to or within. What are your go-to tips for finding new outlets, finding new bloggers or influencers or journalists that you can add to your media lists? Why don't we start there?
Yeah, I would say the first thing I usually do, and maybe this comes from like agency background, is just a deep dive on competitive research and really understanding where competitors have had success. And, you know, basically to lay it out, it's like, open up Ahrefs and I'll put in a competitor's site, check out their top content, and then look at the coverage that they've gotten. And then you can kind of just start kind of creating a map for yourself as to what type of content works in the industry, who are the, you know, types of industries or outlets that cover it. You could tell a lot by a competitor, and that's like, yeah, that's always the first thing I do. I would say within that, like, you can also branch off into a bunch of different topics, but like, you'll often find major industry reports that are covered. If you catch enough competitors, and then find out who covers them, obviously. Reddit is surprisingly helpful. I mean, even myself, when I worked at Homebuyer before, after I left Siege, I worked in-house at Homebuyer, which was like first time homebuyer loans. I didn't know anything about it. So I just went to Reddit and just like did a deep dive on, there was something called a subreddit called first time homebuyers. And I just did a deep dive, and you'll find people naturally will link to, you know, oh, check out this source. It's not like the company or the website actively pitching this, or maybe they are on the DL, but like you find some great resources and you find where people maybe spend their time who are actually the audience for this, for that industry. And the last thing I was going to say, that I remember when I was with Siege, we had someone in the construction industry, and I didn't know anything about the construction industry. And like one of the first posts that we did for them was this top construction blogs post, and it served a bunch of different purposes. Like, A, you know, it's a piece of content that would help their audience, obviously, but it also had some search volume. There was some search volume around top construction blogs, but then you could also kind of lean into the like, hey, we mentioned you in this, just wanted to let you know kind of thing. And through that technique, like, I actually made a lot of great relationships with people that worked at those blogs, right? Like, I don't think this would work in every single industry. Like, I don't, you know, there's definitely like top finance blogs or something. Like, you have to kind of pick the ones that are not the very top and maybe not at the very bottom. Like, there's that middle section of people who are maybe running the blogs themselves, and it's one or two person operation who are actually going to be flattered that you included them on the list. But I think there is a little bit of that like ego bait that you can lean into, but then also then you can lean in. If once you start publishing stuff, you can ask them to cover it. And that worked really well. And I've always thought about that, like using that technique as just like a starter for any of the clients that I have. I maybe did it a couple more times, and it's hit or miss again. Like, you really have to figure out that where the top is and where the bottom is in terms of the bloggers and who's a kind of mom and pop shop versus a big publication.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So I have a follow-up question. You mentioned Ahrefs. So for our listeners who don't really dabble with that tool, can you explain what it is exactly?
Yeah. So Ahrefs is like a very powerful, it's got a lot of different tools. Essentially, it gives you metrics about a website. It'll tell you all the pages that a website has. It'll tell you things like the number of links each page on a website has, as well as like, you know, overall metrics. It'll tell you how much estimated traffic that site gets. And, you know, they have a lot of really specific tools, like you can get into broken backlinks, like how many links are pointing to your site that are no longer pointing to that site, or maybe someone else's site has a broken link on it where they created some big asset and then the link is no longer live. So then you could use that as a content piece. There are, you know, site auditing tools that it has. You can kind of keep track of the health of your site, but So it's basically like this Swiss Army knife tool. And I kind of have maybe three or four different workflows that I really lean on it for. Keyword research, and then just kind of competitive analysis and content ideation. I mean, it's so, so helpful for content ideation. Probably do a whole podcast on that itself. but I really think having a tool like that, even if you're not into SEO, it's cheap enough where the insights that you're going to get out of it, even if you know just like a handful of metrics that you need to look at, I think they're going to be worth it. It's helps you kind of sell a campaign sometimes where you can lean on things like the search volume that a keyword might have if you want to lean on that, or they give a value called the traffic value where, to rank for a keyword. Let me say that again. There's a metric that they have called traffic value, and it essentially estimates what you wouldn't spend on PPC, pay-per-click data. So like if you wanted to rank for a keyword, say digital PR software, if you wanted to pay for that and appear above the search results as, like an ad or sponsored, you would see that on Google. You'd have to pay a certain amount of money. But as an SEO, you basically, like, organic traffic is when you can appear on those search results without paying that money. So they basically estimate what you would have spent to rank number one for that keyword. That's a long-winded way of saying, like, you can give a nice dollar value to a content idea. You can say, like, hey, this is technically worth $15,000, like, that we would have had to spend to get this to rank number one, where you could spend $15,000 with us and we can pitch, we can create it, we can pitch it and naturally get you to rank without having to spend that money.
Cool. That, I gotta say, it's what you're, that tip there is reminding me of the advice that I learned from Siege as well. And it speaks to your background and the stuff that you all do over there. Like, it's just so fascinating to me because it's math and it's not my forte, but it's so smart. It's so smart. And it's reminding me of also just to give a shout out to Siege. And I think you were there when they were doing this as well, when I learned about it, but how you all decide whether or not it's worth creating content for digital PR purposes, depending on like their competitors and links that their competitors have and how many you need to build in order to outrank the competitors. There's a whole math equation that I believe Siege and maybe you still use today to make it determine whether or not it's worth it and to pitch that to the client. And that's just been so fascinating. Have you seen that before, Jackie? I'm pretty sure I like
no.
ping that to you. Okay. I need to, it's
send that to me. I'm curious.
Yeah. It's really cool. And just to learn, pick your brain about Ahrefs, I feel like I could do this all day.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. And I know I just like dumped some big stuff. The like traffic value and like putting a value on an idea, I think is a really interesting concept. And like some of it doesn't work because there is always going to be value in brand new stuff, right? So like this putting a value to it only works if you have something to compare it to that's been done already. And like, so say, let's keep using that example, the like digital PR software. It's kind of a bad example, but like not fun example. But like if I knew, someone had created some cool interactive post or something, but it was ranking for that keyword, then I would know, okay, I can pitch to my client, like, we should do something like this. Like, look what they're doing. They're winning with this idea. Look how much traffic it's generating for them. Look how many links it's generating for them. And, maybe they're not even interested in the links themselves. Maybe they're interested in the coverage. A tool like that, you can go in and say, like, it's 50 backlinks is what it says. But, like, you can go in and see, okay, it's covered from TechCrunch and what, different publications. It tells you exactly. So you can say, if we do something like this, we should be able to get similar links, similar coverage. So I think there's so much value in leaning into those competitors. And even if you have a new idea, obviously, that was another big thing with Siege, was trying to show some type of social proof. Mm-hmm. So even if it wasn't a one-to-one, like my competitor is doing this, we would still try to look at some type of social proof. And it's not always putting a dollar amount on it, but being able to say, this post got 1,000 upvotes on Reddit or whatever, giving some type of value, even if it's not dollar value, if it's social value or something, I think that can always be helpful too.
Yeah.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Bringing it back to media list building, and I think Ahrefs, my sneaking suspicion is that perhaps you use Ahrefs in this way too, but say you found an outlet that you haven't heard of before because it's a brand new industry that you're really not familiar with personally. How do you decipher whether or not they're a quality website that you should be adding to your media list?
Yeah. So that is, it's definitely an Ahrefs thing, but also now I have built this is it a heuristic? I don't know if that's the right term, but this little checklist that I have, and whether or not the site is quality. So there's a couple things you could check, I think, qualitatively and then quantitatively. And quantitatively, it's typically I'd use something like Ahrefs. So normally my workflow is with BuzzStream, you pull in a list of keywords. Of websites. So I would go to Ahrefs, say I found some competitor piece that I wanted to pitch to all the same people that linked to my competitor's post. I'd pull in that list into BuzzStream, and it lets you pull in metrics from Ahrefs and from Moz and from Majestic. These are all, similar tools. Majestic and Moz are similar tools to Ahrefs. And what I'm looking for from the quantitative perspective is domain authority or domain rating. So basically the strength of the domain, usually built off of how many backlinks and the strength of those backlinks that they have. And then another thing would be the organic traffic that a site has. So this is something that BuzzStream would pull in for you. I'm sorry, that Ahrefs would pull in for you. And it basically says is this site, it's an estimate. These aren't hard numbers, but it'll tell you how many keywords the site as a whole is ranking for. And therefore their estimated monthly traffic would look like XYZ. So they base it off of keyword data. So this, it discounts or doesn't include, any direct traffic or non-organic traffic that a website would get. But it's a pretty good starting point for just kind of directionally understanding, is this a quality site or is this just kind of some spammy site that's not going to really be around for a while or might get hit by a Google algorithm penalty or something. So authority, domain authority, organic traffic. But then I go to the qualitative stuff, which is more fun because you can kind of check those metrics off pretty quickly. And you could probably even get rid of them before you even pull in the list itself to BuzzStream. But then I look at stuff Google has really been pushing EEAT signals. So experience, expertise, authority, and trust. They've also been pushing for helpful content, sites that give helpful content. So I look at that site with those things in mind. Is this site, does this look trustworthy to me? Do they have, trust badges or secure badges or something at the bottom of their page? Do they have, do they have real authors, or is it just some random, you know, is it the same author on every single page, and like they don't have a bio? And so I'm really looking at it as though I'm Google, right? Like what signals to me here that this is a quality site? I think when I think of, you know, digital PR pitches and like news coverage, I think no matter what, they're going to be quality. I think it's when you get to kind of outside of like the mainstream news, when you're getting more into like industry and niche specific sites. So like, say you started a brand new site, like we were talking about earlier, brand new industry, and you didn't know anything about whatever, let's say construction. So like, that's when you really need to start. Okay. Like not every, because it's not some random radio station, you know, affiliated with NBC or whatever. It's Johnny's construction blog. And then you really got to understand if Johnny's construction blog is built just to make itself money, right? Is it just selling guest posts for itself and, you know, website arbitrage or something, or is it actually producing solid content? So I really look for those things, those eat signals. And then what I like to tell people too, is just like, for most of this stuff, you could just give it the eye test. Like usually if a site looks like crap, it's probably going to be crappy. Yeah. That you're going to get back. Right? Like, there's not like a ton of science behind it, but like you can usually tell. Mm-hmm. Like if you really want to get official, like you would go through this checklist and like look at all those things. But like usually you can get like 90% of there, I think, with just the eye test.
I agree with that.
I think the last thing I probably didn't mention was just relevancy. Obviously, it should be relevant to your site that you're pitching or your link or whatever your client is or something. And that, I think, it's a sliding scale as well. Like I recently did this post where I talked about website authority versus website relevancy and like kind of created this matrix where it's like, if it's highly relevant and highly authoritative, obviously that's awesome, but it's going to be really hard to get those links. Those are the cream of the crop. But there's the like low authority but highly relevant. That's probably where you're going to get the most responses and the most coverage, just because a lot of these sites are, maybe they're newer and they're trying to grow themselves. So like, just because they don't have a great domain authority doesn't mean that they're not producing great content. It's just maybe they're new. And then there's the like high authority, low relevancy. Those like are okay, I think, from an SEO, but they won't have as much staying power. Like they're not going to last as long when you're talking about SEO value. So it's like the high relevancy, high authority. Yes, great. High relevancy, low authority. I think those are just as great. And that's probably where most people play and kind of like what you probably want, because that's where most of the customers will be anyway.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to, earlier when you were talking, I wanted to make sure that we called out the up and comers in the media space that maybe they don't have like a huge audience yet, but it, you know, they might, the on paper, if you just look at the numbers, it might look like low because of the domain rank being low, but then you go to the page and you're like, or their website, and you're like, okay, this, they're trying here. Like it's going to get better.
Yeah. It's that's worth what I don't, like Britt, you said that earlier, like I'm not a math person either. I have like my couple things that I look for, you know, but then
do you guys do addition and subtraction? I'm just kidding.
No, I don't. I use my phone.
That's a different pod. I was told there'd be no math on here.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, I love joking about math.
Funniest jokes out there. Sorry, that's the last one.
Yeah, you can like fake it for sure. Like, you know, like a couple things and then, but yeah, I really do think like the gut decision is usually like the best. Like the eye test is going to get you most of the way there anyway.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before too, where I truly believe that some of those outlets that you might overlook that are more trade and you know, seem, maybe if they even seem a little bit outdated, sometimes they might have highly engaged audiences and they may have been around for a very long time too, but you just might not notice it from just looking at the website, because like I said, it might look very outdated, but that's just because they're in, so in the weeds on the topics that they're discussing. And although you might not be an expert in construction, you can tell when they're actually getting into the weeds on things. They're not just publishing like, here's how to lay concrete 101 or whatever might right. be ranking for that term. And yeah, just think about it from an SEO perspective. If you have an SEO background, are these folks just creating content to try and rank, or are they actually creating content that's going to be useful to the people reading these articles? It might be a smaller group of people, which explains why their domain authority might be small. But I've seen clients who've been featured in those types of websites or outlets, and they've received targeted organic traffic, and that goes such a long way. In many regards, right? It's not only brand awareness, but you're actually getting traffic from relevant websites and all of that jazz. So don't overlook the little guys. It's a current theme that we have.
I think one of the first things I learned was, I'm trying to remember like who this was that taught me this, but like you want to find the sites that feed the bigger sites, right? So like those low authority, highly relevant sites are sometimes going to be like, and they might even look like crap. They might look like an old, you know, website, but like to your point, Britt, like they're going to have a lot of highly engaged visitors. I mean, you know, look at like Reddit itself isn't
beautiful
looking site, right? But like, so there's plenty of those. So I think, again, to me, that gets down to using those tools to like really see where people are getting their links from. And you can get smart with it and say, okay, I want to get featured on TechCrunch, but where's TechCrunch getting their stories from, right? Like you look at the backlinks from there, or you can find it on their stories. They're, you know, they're mentioning such and such blog that they found this information. So then you pitch those initial blogs and they're going to be the lower barrier to entry because they're just not as big as a TechCrunch. So you can get strategic with it for sure. And, I think the last thing I would say is a tip, for understanding the audience engagement. Like you can look at social, like click into their socials, you know, do they have a highly engaged Facebook community or Twitter or something? Sometimes that's an insight into how engaged they are. Or sometimes it's funny. I just turned these off on BuzzStream when I started because I didn't really think people use them anymore, but like comments on sites, like the comment threads, like on a post at the bottom, I'm realizing that maybe sites do use these still, and like those again are that's a great signal that people are engaged with this site, even if it doesn't look like it on the surface because of such and such metric.
No, those are good tips. I just to share really quick, I was working on a campaign late last year and it had a geographical angle, and I'll just call out the city. Miami was on the list, and I'm like, okay, I need to target people who cover like Miami news. I guess I shouldn't say obviously, but I wanted to target the big outlets and the little outlets. So I did my due diligence. The person or the outlet to break the story was ended up being a smaller blog, which at first I was like, surprised. Like I wanted like NBC Miami is what I really wanted. Cause they often cover these kinds of stories. But what happened was it was a Miami real estate blog, super small domain ranking. I would say it was either 50 or below. I guess 50 isn't super low, but you know, it's smaller than the big guys. Yeah, after they broke it, it seemed like a chain reaction. Then NBC broke it and some other outlets broke it. And it's interesting because I'm like, well, why does it matter? Well, the city of Miami shared one of the stories on their social media. So it was kind of like a race to see who could then continue to cover it, if that makes sense, like cover it next. Right. So
you cracked the code.
Yeah. I cracked the code. I just got to reach out to these little real estate blogs. Who knew? Not that it wasn't tiny, but you know, it was like a trade publication, you would call that, I would think. kind of cool.
Totally.
It
was, that's amazing.
Britt's been preaching this for a long time, so it was really cool to see like a concrete evidence of it happen, like with work. I'm like, oh shit, it happened. Ooh, sorry for cursing. Ooh, we should edit like a beep when someone curses. That'd be kind of funny. Work on that, Britt.
How's your sound effect game?
Yes.
There you go.
Those are really awesome tips, though. And I think what comes to my mind and also leads to our final question, too, is like this all takes time. This isn't something that you can't ask ChatGPT for. You can't have a robot do this. And you have to take the time to understand the outlet before and the person you're pitching before sending the email. Vince, what tips do you have for people who are at an agency or on a team and might need to scale their media list building and outreach strategies?
Yeah, this is the toughest thing because I think I've seen it been done a wide variety of ways. So with Siege, we were very much like the person pitching the post was also the person who ideated and wrote the post.
Wow.
So I
wrote
that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it gives you like this great connection and insight, and you're constantly thinking about how you're going to actually pitch it at the end. So you kind of can build in the angles and the, and this is what I recommend to people. It's like when you ideate, you should be thinking about the end result too. Like you should be thinking about the headlines that you're going to be getting or going after when you're ideating these campaigns that you do. So I think, so that's tip number one is like, think of the big picture. So even if you don't have the person doing the outreach that's also doing the ideation and writing, they should at least be kind of on the same page and like understand the kind of like through lines from ideation to pitching. Like what makes this pitchable is a question that we used to ask a lot. Like what makes this unique? What makes this stand out? Being able to answer those from the very beginning and kind of pass that along to everyone, pass it along to the designers, make sure they understand we're not designing this to look like someone else's. We're designing it because of this one new tweak that we're doing. We're putting this in 3D, whereas everything else was 2D or something. And then when you're pitching, these are the core differentiators of our piece. You know, if you're pitching the same people that covered a similar post, right? Like you want to make sure you're pointing out the things that are unique about yours. So that's the one thing. And then I would say, so you can do it. I liked that approach that Siege had where it was the one person doing everything because it really leveled up everyone. And honestly, like just sitting and doing outreach all day long can be soul crushing.
Sorry, I had to laugh because...
Do you feel it? I mean, I've been in both situations.
Okay.
And I'd say more, it's probably less, I'd say it's more fun to do kind of more digital PR type outreach versus like broken link building or some of these like more heavily SEO focused ones. It was nice to have someone do it all because it levels up everybody's, like as an agency, everyone is getting smarter, you know, everyone's getting a piece of the pie. The other approach that I know a lot of people do is outsource the outreach portion, right? So in agencies, it's you create something great and then you create a template and then you give it to like some VA or something to virtual assistant to help just do the outreach. And I think that's fine, but like you really have to still nail down every step of the process up until that template portion. I mean, if that's where you're going to hand it off, I don't love that because I think you alluded to this in the very beginning. Like I come from a background of highly personalized outreach. I rarely ever did one template that gets sent to like 1,000 people. It was more like many templates to 100 people. And sometimes, like, if I couldn't find a way to personalize and customize an email, I would just throw that person out. And I know there's a lot of different thoughts on this. I can say that I, at an agency, the reason I think the personalization helps is because it does build relationships more quickly and more effectively. But you know, that might not be for every agency, right? Like, it takes time to do it. If you're going to spend 10 minutes to find something unique about a person that you can connect with, per email, that's a lot. But if you can then tap back into this person campaign after campaign for different clients, like, that to me makes a lot of sense. So it's a kind of cost benefit thing, there, but so yeah, you definitely have to weigh the options, I think, in these mm-hmm. approaches, but I think it does build stronger relationships. And I can think of many times when I would specifically call out something to a journalist or something, or, you know, I'd find something in their bio. The example I used recently, I forget, on a post or something, was like, somebody was from Philly and said they were like a Phillies fan, and I'm a Phillies fan. It's right there in my bio. So I was like, hey, you know, like, we talked about it over email, something that happened. And the guy was like, oh, this is like a great pitch. I've never received out of all the types of pitches I get, it's nice to have someone that like comes to you on a normal level. And I think that probably works even better for freelance journalists than in-house journalists, maybe. Now that I'm like thinking back on it, like, those were the ones that were really more receptive to the like hyper personalization. Cause you're pitching them stuff that they can then use to kind of hopefully like further their career. Whereas like yep. someone that's in-house, and you two could probably speak to this way better than me, but like, someone that's in-house is just like, I got to hit these numbers. I got to get 5 posts out. I don't care about you, you know, not yeah. really.
But there's some truth to that for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, to recap, it's like making sure there's that through line and we know what makes your post unique and special. And then the second portion is like, if you are trying to scale outreach, do whatever you can to make it personal. I mean, if you're going to outsource, there's limits to it, but I think, you know, making sure everything's spelled correctly, making sure you know, you use the right name. I think for me, the thing that I used to hate with using media lists is like, and again, you two can speak to this probably better than me, but like, they get so outdated, you end up pitching people the wrong stuff. Or if you're not doing your due diligence to really target exactly who you want, those media lists are going to not really serve you well. It's they're not going to be as effective. So there's like another conversation I think to be had of like, if we could all just do it the right way, like, it would make everyone's job easier. But I think there's too many people that do the mass outreach that do it incorrectly, that to the point where like, that's why nobody reads our pitches, right? Like, yeah. That's why you have to, you know, you're forced to personalize to stand out. I know that's not always true, like, but you know, that's kind of my general thesis right now. It's like, even in SEO link building, there's so much bad practice out there, and people are just focused on numbers, and we got to hit X amount of links. They don't really care about the quality of the stuff, or care about the quality of the content or the pitching. It just kind of hurts everybody. So,
yeah, I agree with that. No, that was good. Yeah, on the point of scaling or whatever, just something that came to mind. I remember, so when Britt and I were working together back in the day, we would handwrite these emails, and I did like every single one. And it did feel like back in 2012, the competition really wasn't quite there, and people were more open to publishing these infographics that we were pitching, like at the time, big websites like Huffington Post and like Mashable, very normal. But now I think like if I'm to be honest, what happened, after that, I went to a client, worked with a client, and I was working underneath a mass, like more of a traditional PR person, and she wanted help with a campaign. That was my introduction to doing more like data study type things. This is back in 2013. And I remember she just like sent me the pitch and she's like, I just copy and paste like this part of the pitch to each person. And that was really new for me. I was a little nervous about doing that. But so what I did was I kind of took both approaches in that I would add the personalization at the beginning of that email. But when I was thinking about it, she was right. Like when we're describing the study, we very much are likely going to be regurgitating some of the same information. So for me to scale, at least from keep in mind, I'm a freelancer, so I don't really have numbers that I have to answer to in terms of number of emails I need to send or anything like that. But my goal is I want to capture an email, whoever I think would be interested in this, to the best of my ability. And so that could be a good measure. I really like what you said about like, maybe you are using a template, but it's not a template for like 1,000 people. Cause that would be like bananas. But if you can subset and find these groups of people like, hey, all these people are, I'm just going to throw an example out there. They're real estate writers, for instance, and they cover this topic. Maybe there's a real estate, like a subset list, and you have that same information for all of those reporters, and maybe you tweak little things about them. But I think there are clever ways to kind of take the best of both worlds, because I think we got to be realistic too, right? Like at the end of the day, if I really wrote every single email from scratch, I would probably not be very successful because there's just not enough time.
Yeah. Right? No, I'm totally with you. And it wasn't ever a full email by scratch.
Right.
I would say the kind of structure was like the first sentence or two is where you make that connection. And it was usually like, I read your post, like enter similar post, right? Like I read your similar post and I liked it because X. And that like, I like it because X is where most people I think get it wrong. Because most people, it's like, and it was really interesting. Like I get these pitches all the time, even like in the link building world, it's like people want to guest post on BuzzStream and it's just, hey, I love your enter post. It was so great. Like, tell me, like, what did you like about it? You know, did you learn something from it? That specifically I learned, or I'm going to try X, Y, Z. I have found, especially when like reaching out to bloggers, that worked really well. I love that tip you gave. I'm going to try it today for, you know, it was like reaching out to, parent bloggers or something. And it was like, oh, I'm going to try it on my 2-year-old today. Like that's a great idea. And then it's like, oh, let me know how it goes. You know, like you get those types of responses and then there you go. Like that's a little connection. So yeah, there is definitely like when we would come up with a campaign, we'd have, okay, how are we going to pitch this as well? Like, well, who are the different markets? Is there even a market? Especially, you know, like these like geo, Jackie, I think you said like working on geo campaigns, it's like you can parse those out into the, you know, if it's like a top 10 best cities in Florida or something, it's like, okay, I'm going to reach out to the top 10. Like they get this specific email, then the bottom 10 are even at this specific email. And then, yeah, there's definitely levels and layers that you can do, but and it's funny, Hannah Smith, I think you mentioned her earlier, like she has started to convince me that like, you know, probably again, like it depends on who you're doing it, but like most journalists probably don't care about the level of personalization. Like they don't care that you like their posts. They'd rather just know what is in
what you're pitching.
Yeah.
What you're pitching. We get that all the time.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm like kind of maybe going back on what I said, but I think it's just, you got to know, there's gotta be something unique about it. You're not ever going to just pitch the same exact thing to every single person, to your point, Jackie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you can't, it's just, not everybody has the same goals. Right. I mean, that would be nuts to think that they would. And yeah, personalization is great. I'm curious about how you approach this, Britt, but I feel like for me, what's felt the most natural over the years is when I do make contact with a reporter, like when they're engaged with me through email correspondence, I get a little friendlier in the sense that, you know, like I might like be like, oh, I noticed this, like kind of like once we break the ice, so to speak. Not always like that. Sometimes I really hyper-personalize if it's somebody I truly, truly, truly want to work with. And it's like one of these situations where I'm not going to get it with like a piece of content. It's going to be one where I need them to know who my clients are and, you know, I want to be a source for them. That's more traditional. But yeah, Britt, what are you looking at in terms of what are your thoughts around personalization right now and making connections?
I'm leaning more into targeting and taking my time to find the right journalist than worrying about personalizing it. I feel like if I have done my job connecting the right story to the right journalist, then I don't have to worry so much about personalizing anything. I haven't actually even said much of anything too personal lately in anything about myself in an email in a very long time. Until that person does come back to me and says something personal is usually when I open up. And I think that's why it's so hard to scale media list building, because I think the more you're able to target the right journalist and, you know, make that connection at the right time, that goes into it too. There's a lot of luck involved, honestly. I think that kind of relies on taking the time and doing your homework. And it's not a numbers game, like a lot of people say.
No. And I agree with the point that you made about research and media list building. That's probably where I spend, I'm not a math person, but I want to think that maybe 90% or maybe even 95% of my time working is building lists and doing the research. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that's how agencies can scale, is building lists that are very organized, and you have journalists and however you segment it, it might be related to the campaign that you're working on, like the topic of the campaign. It might be by the reporter's beats. That's up to you. But I think that's how you can scale, is making sure that your media lists are updated and not relying on them as viable, still going out of your way to look at what those recent posts are that journalist is writing about, because they might have switched beats. It happens all the time.
All the time.
All the time. And I also think that's why agencies tend to niche down, and they might have started off as like a broad digital marketing agency, but now they only work with clients in like the real estate space, to keep with the real estate trend theme that we have going here. I think that's why a lot of agencies niche down when they start to grow. And I think it's smart, and I totally get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts. But I'm all here for people who personalize. I don't bash it at all. If it's working for you, it's working for you.
Yeah. I'm jealous. I want it to work for me. It's just like, I can't. I don't think I would have the results that I do if I really did that 24/7.
Yeah. I think in the news space, like, it definitely is a different ball game than like traditional link building in terms of personalization. I can say that like I had done less personalization in the news outreach. I think one maybe tip for people that maybe don't have access to media lists, because that was the other thing, like we never really pitched for media lists, is just to then go off of those competitors and like similar content. Like the more similar content that you can find, just like build your lists off of people who have covered that similar content. And then that connection point becomes that, like, and I don't know if I'm allowed to ask questions, you guys, but like,
oh yeah.
Do you use those, you know, if you're finding 10 different journalists who have covered such and such study, do you even bother referencing that? Since you covered X study, I have this new study. Just, if it's not obvious enough in the connection, then it's not even worth pitching, kind of thing. Then they're not connected enough.
I mean, there's exceptions. I think if you there's exceptions to everything in PR, mm-hmm. which I think is important to keep in mind, because I've definitely, when reaching out to people, have mentioned if I think it's important for them. Like, I noticed that you have covered these, that you tend to cover this regularly, and I thought you might be interested in this. But more times than not, especially like for me, like I use the same client as an example with our last episode with Hannah Smith, but there's a client I've been working with regularly, and we put out in some cases annually the same studies, but on a monthly basis. So I'm already doing outreach to a lot of the same people regularly. And so it's just like, it would be like a broken record for me to be like, oh, you pitch real estate data, or you cover real estate data, blah, blah, blah. It's like kind of obvious. I mean, if they're posting real estate data regularly, then of course they're going to want to see your study. Even if they don't. Yeah.
That's a good point. My mindset has always been like, I don't think I've ever done it that way where it's like, hey, because you cover X beat. Like, I think if you have to say that, then you're not doing it right. But I like to reference the thing that they've shared, because it's like, in my mind, at least, they've got a million articles they're writing and a million studies. And it's just like, right. I did cover that. You're right. And it's like that immediate connection. You know, it can answer that question of like, well, you cover, you know, if they say no, it's like, well, you covered that one. You're not going to cover ours. Not that you would say that, but like it kind of plants that seed in their head, you know, makes it harder for them to say no. Or like that it's not a good fit, because you're like, no.
I would say it doesn't hurt. I would say it doesn't hurt, but we've had so many people, even the episode with Ian that we just recorded that will come out soon.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
You want to bring it up, Britt? I feel like I've talked a lot, but I'm curious, like,
oh no.
How would you tie it in?
Well, I mean, that's a great example of how sometimes it works.
Just
to fill you in, Vince, we talked to a reporter yesterday from The Street, and he's a technology reporter. He writes about the intersection of AI and music, actually, and other topics too, not just that, but that is one topic that he writes about frequently. And the CTO of an AI company creating something really cool reached out to him and immediately started the email with, I think, noticed that you write about the intersection of AI and music and thought you might be interested in something we're building. And in that instance, it worked. I personally might have started off with something different, but, you know, it goes to show you that what we recommend isn't always like Bible, and it's not going to work for every journalist. Everybody's different, and it's a very nuanced topic. Is that what you were going to say, Jackie?
Yeah. And to the point where we kind of mentioned that, oh, interesting way. Like, does that work? Like,
yeah, we were going crazy. We were like, this email, like there's so many things we would change, but it worked. And it was such a fantastic article. It was all about that company. It was a dream article for a PR person.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was timing. He said timing.
But he did say if it came from a PR person, he might have looked at it differently. That was interesting too.
Yeah. Because it wasn't a perfect pitch. So that's kind of the thing, is like, you know, he could kind of almost, okay, it's a CTO pitching. I can see why. But
that person targeted really well. Yeah, he targeted, like, picked the right journalist. Yeah.
He really did. That was not bad. So,
yeah.
There was something, I think, in one of your recent interviews too, I'm blanking on the name of the journalist, but you were talking about like a specific pitch, and you were like, what about this subject line stood out? And she read it back and she was like, oh, actually nothing. Like, I wouldn't even open this. I don't know why I opened it. So there's probably just some luck too, and timing, like you said.
A lot of luck.
A lot of luck, a lot of perseverance, don't give up, and don't beat yourself up, because it can be soul-crushing, like you said, Vince, it can. You deal with a lot of rejection, a lot of crickets in your inbox. Oh, no, we'll end with like a really good, you know, actionable advice and everything, but it's worth reiterating. I mean, nobody has the answers. You're going to do a lot of testing, you're going to figure out what works for you, and how, you know, it's all different for everybody, but...
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to add on scaling media lists, scaling content outreach, or just anything else you want to tell us about you know, the content that you're creating at BuzzStream, what our listeners should be listening or looking out for, and where they can find you online. That was a lot of questions in one, but yeah. You take it wherever right, you want to take this, Vince. Yeah.
So I would say the one thing, and that this is like a veiled pitch for BuzzStream, but like I the reason I decided to work at BuzzStream was because I it was so helpful for me as a link builder, and I'll loop myself in as a digital PR, although I'm not as accomplished as you both, but
you're still a PR.
The thing that I really like about BuzzStream and in general is the relationship building that you can do. And like, that's what I liked and why I think we were successful at Siege, because at an agency, when you're doing it at scale and you have a bunch of different clients going at once, it's easier for you to see, I've had success in XYZ, like client journalists have already given me links for these clients. So like that we have a built-in like shoe in the door. Hey, you shared, like if Britt, you worked at Siege with me, like I would say like, hey, you shared my colleague Britt's post on XYZ. I have a similar post. And like, that was an immediate shoe in, and that helps a ton. And like, it's almost the more you put in, the more you get out, because I've been at, you know, other agencies and worked at other places where they're just starting link building. And it's a lot tougher because you don't have those built-in relationships. So there is something to scaling and building it out where you can lean on existing relationships and it just kind of like lowers the barrier, and you start to understand what works for different industries better. And like having those insights across an agency or across even a specific brand to understand what has worked and what hasn't worked, and you know, who's receptive and who isn't, like all of those things are super, super valuable. And it helped my career in a huge way to be able to think about it like in a broad strokes, as well as getting into like micro personalization stuff. So that is why I really, that was the thing that I would always say about like scaling link building and how it works and how it might not work, or how it might be harder for people that are just starting out at an agency. Like I know recently digital PR became like a thing that more and more agencies are pitching, and it was just, it's hard to just say like, okay, we do digital PR now. It's like, it's not as easy as just flipping that switch where, you know, there is some kind of structure that you need to put in place before you can really start seeing that like flywheel come into effect. And like, you can really start leaning on things that you've made before. And so that's what I'll say about that. In terms of where you can find our stuff, the BuzzStream blog, check it out. I'm publishing a bunch of stuff on there. We got like guest posts, we got videos, and maybe a podcast sooner than later starring Britt and Jackie in an episode. Yeah. So check it out. I think the most
podcasting is so fun. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is really fun.
I mean, I got the light. It's like, it's the hardest part, I think. Right. I would say I'm really interested in what people are struggling with. So that's why it's been so helpful for me to get this, and like why I want to be on more podcasts and talk to more people in the industry too, is because that helps me ideate, but then also like helps the team build a better product as well. So, you know, I encourage people to reach out to say what they like about their tools, what they don't like, what they like about BuzzStream, what they don't like, what problems they're having in the industry. I'm happy to answer those and chat about them. I clearly like chatting about this stuff. So reach out to me on like LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm very accessible on any of those platforms.
Yes, everybody follow Vince. He is, if you don't know Vince and you're in digital PR, you're missing out. That is the biggest takeaway, if you take away anything from this podcast. Vince, you've just, I love your online personality, and it's really cool to connect with you again.
Thank you so much.
That sounds so lame, online personality, but you know what I mean.
It's so cool to like
see
about?
And talk to people on LinkedIn and everywhere, and then just finally see them face to face and get to talk to them again. It's really nice. But yeah, thank you so much, Vince, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of We Earn Media. Jacqueline and I have a bit of a favor to ask. If you find the podcast useful and have an extra minute or two to spare, we would be incredibly grateful if you could take just a moment to leave a rating. Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps others discover our show. Thank you so much, listeners, for being a part of our PR community, and we can't wait to hear what you think.